أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. أشهد أن محمد.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Islam in Focus. Today's program is the 47th on the series Sources of Islam, and it is the 7th on the arrangement of the Quran. My name is Dashaat Mamish, I'm your host, and with me Dr. Jamal Badawi from St. Mary's University. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Badawi.
Wa alaikum assalam.
How about a quick summary maybe of last week's program?
Okay, it's going to be very quick.
Okay.
You can make a very detailed summary of the type of program that you had last week. But basically we began to examine to another aspect of the arrangement of the Quran, trying to show that the ending of one surah or chapter seems to be connected very much with the beginning of the following surah, as if there's a sort of link between one chapter and the other. In making this analysis, at least to determine responsibility for opinions expressed, I mentioned that it combined some of the opinions expressed by Jalaluddin Asyuti, the famous scholar of the Quran from the 15th century in the Common Era, in addition to a few remarks, very few remarks made by the editor of his book, Abdul Qadir Atta. But there was quite a bit also of some humble reflections of mine, and I'm only saying that for the purpose again of determining my responsibility for whatever I try to understand. I'd like to add at this point that I have heard of a manuscript, a book that's not published, but in a manuscript form in the public library in Egypt, which is composed of 6 volumes that deal basically with that topic by a great scholar who was a contemporary of Jalaluddin Suyuti by the name of Burhanuddin al-Baqa'i. But I have not seen that volume or that work yet. As I said, it's not published. And I wouldn't be surprised if the work is published at a later time, but some of my humble reflections might somehow be similar to his thoughts also. But I haven't seen it yet.
Very well. Then why don't we just continue with this analysis?
From where we left?
Well, yeah.
Okay. In the last program, we ended with chapter 30.
Mm-hmm.
And we said that the ending of chapter or surah number 30 deals with a dialogue, a sort of dialogue between the believers and the unbelievers, that is, in the Day of Judgment, the encounter between them.
Right.
Now, if we shift our attention now to the beginning of surah number 31, the one on top, we find that the beginning also is basically a sort of encounter also between believers and unbelievers, but instead in this life here. For example, it deals with people whom or to whom the verses of the Quran are recited, but they turn away in pride. So it's still basically an encounter between believers and unbelievers. This surah, chapter number 31, ends with the emphasis that Allah, or God, capital G, knows the unseen. And there is a special reference to the hour, that is the day of reckoning. That's particularly found in the very last verse in that surah. The beginning of chapter 32 also emphasizes that Allah knows the unseen. So you see the connection between the end of the one on top and the beginning of the one in the third line, that is the chapter 32. After a brief introduction in this chapter about the Quran and the creation of heavens and earth, it directly goes to speak about Allah as Alim al-Ghayb wa al-Shahada, the one who knows the things that are present and things that are hidden or unseen. Chapter 32 ends by sort of advising the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, to turn away from the unbelievers. Actually, this is the very last verse, فَأَعْرِضْ عَنْهُمْ, turn away from the unbelievers. It is surprising to notice that in chapter 33, it also, as if it continues also to address the Prophet. In other words, the last verse is addressed to the Prophet, The first verse of the next chapter also addresses the Prophet, and it says, وَلَا تُطِعِ الْكَافِرِينَ, that is, don't you obey or keep away or turn away from the unbelievers and the hypocrites, which is a beautiful connection between both. That chapter 33 ends with some mention of the trust and accountability. That is the fact that humans are appointed as the trustees of God on earth, and that this is a heavy responsibility, and it talks again about the consequences of following or passing that test in terms of believers and the punishment for those who do not fulfill that responsibility or trust. Chapter 34 begins also with emphasis on the domain and knowledge of God, and applies to those who reject the hour, and deals as well also with the positive and negative consequences of belief and unbelief. That chapter, number 34, ends with indication that belief after the hour comes is too late, that people may hope to believe at that time, but it's too late already, particularly in the last four verses in that chapter. And this relates very much to the beginning of chapter 35, which is next to that, dealing with the rejectors of the truth and the kind of punishment that awaits for them. That chapter 35 ends also dealing with rejectors as well, but this time dealing with their attitude toward Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. In fact, in the very last three or four verses, it describes again how they keep away, and the more they are reminded, the more they turn away. That is very much connected with the beginning of the 36th chapter, the 36th, showing that after all, the Prophet is on the right path. That's called Surah Yasin, in the first few verses, indicating that after the introduction of the Surah, that you, O Prophet, is truly on the right path. That chapter 36 ends with emphasis on Allah's domain, that like in the very last verse, فَسُبْحَانَ الَّذِي بِيَدِهِ مَلَكُوتِ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ, glory be to him in whose hand is the domain of all things. That ending is very relevant to the beginning of the following chapter or surah number 37, because it deals with another attribute of Allah as the Creator. In the first five verses, after the introduction of the surah or chapter, it moves on and talk about Allah as the Creator. That chapter 37 ends with the arguments presented by those who rejected faith, and actually threaten them that the things that they are hastening, or the doom that they are hastening, is indeed going to happen to them. If we look at the beginning of the following chapter, number 38, we find that it also deals with the rejectors, but as if it answers the questions as to why those rejectors of truth take this particular attitude, and as the Quran explains, that they are in false pride, in schism. So in other words, it's both deal with the rejectors. 38 ends with mention about the Quran, in هو إلا ذكر للعالمين, that the Quran is a reminder for all humankind. And this is exactly the beginning also. The Quran is the beginning of chapter 39. There's also mention about the Quran as being a revelation or book that has been revealed from Allah. Both of them deal with the Quran, end and beginning. The end of 39 deals with the punishment and reward in the Day of Judgment, how the unbelievers will be driven into the hellfire, how those who are pious will be taken to paradise. And again, that is very much relevant to the beginning of chapter 40, because it also deals with Allah as forgiver of sins, but one also who punishes for deviation from faith. So both of them again deal with the consequences of obedience or lack of obedience. And finally, in that particular column, the ending of chapter 30 deals with the fact that the unbelievers are indeed the losers. وَخَسِرَ هُنَالِكَ الْكَافِرُونَ, that these people in the day of judgment will be the ones really who are indeed the losers.
Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Badawi, it's very clear the connection between the two chapters, but from the description here, there also seems to be a connection between the beginning and the end of the same chapter. Before we go on, maybe I'll ask you to comment on this.
I think this is a very well taken point. It's only to say that I didn't want to make it too complex and make that connection also while dealing with those surahs. But this is actually part of the nature of each surah or chapter in the Quran in terms of the coherence that you find in that chapter. As indicated before, the chapters could vary in length. Some are very short, some are quite long. But even in the very long surahs in the Quran, let's say over even 200 verses, and despite of the diversity or variations of the ways of presentation and the subtopics presented, you can easily still identify, after some reflection, the continuity and the unity of the whole chapter as a unit connected together. In fact, there has been no writing actually about that particular issue. For example, very interesting commentary on the Quran by Sayyid Qutb always emphasized that, and before beginning to explain each chapter of the Quran, this kind of summary is made about how this connection between the end and beginning and the various topics covered. To some extent also, the popular translation of the meaning of the Quran by Allama Yusuf Ali, Abdullah Yusuf Ali, make this kind of introduction also prior to each chapter. So I think your observation is well taken.
Could we proceed now?
Okay. All right. Just to connect with where we stopped, if you recall, we were saying that in chapter 40, it ended with indicating the destiny of the unbelievers, that they are the losers, that is, in the day of judgment. Chapter 41 begins also dealing with rejectors, as if to answer the question why they are losers in the day of judgment. So it deals with their attitudes here in this life, how they turn away from the truth. You notice many times it sounds like the ending of one chapter might raise a question in the mind of the reader which seems to be answered in the beginning.
We have next chapter.
The next chapter, which is an interesting feature in the Quran. That 41 also ends with mention about the Quran and how people rejected the Quran. Many rejected the Quran even though it was from Allah, it was a revelation from Allah. And if you continue with the beginning of chapter 42, the following one, you find that it also deals with the Quran. See, that Quran is indeed revelation that has been revealed to you, O Muhammad, as revelation was given to prophets before you, to show again that the Quran is not really something new or totally different from the broad phenomenon of revelation throughout history. That chapter 42 ends also with mention about the Quran, that it is revelation also from Allah, or a spirit from our command, or from the command of Allah, i.e. revelation. And here I think your earlier remark would be relevant. You said also that you noted the connection between the beginning and ending of many chapters. Actually, this is one clear example of that, that the chapter begins talking about the Quran and ends also talking about the Quran. Others can be also found with further analysis, if you go beyond the obvious. In chapter 43, we find it begins again dealing with some aspects pertaining to the Quran, how the Quran was made clear. And again, that connects with the end of 42. ending of 42. 43 ends, however, with dealing with the rejectors and how those rejectors, if you ask them indeed who created them, they say Allah created them, and indicating how, you know, they really close their eyes to belief. You notice that the beginning of chapter 44 begins also dealing with the rejectors and indicate how they are really involved in play, how they are indifferent, how they are just suffering from unnecessary doubt about the truth of the message. 44 ends dealing with the Quran, how Allah made it easy for the Prophet to recite the Quran. The Quran as a theme in the end of 44 is also the theme of the beginning of 45. And it talks also about the Quran, how it is a revelation from Allah. 45 ends dealing with the destiny of rejectors, that is in the Day of Judgment, not here, in the hereafter. The beginning of 46 deals also with the rejectors of faith here on this earth, how they are turning away from the warning or signs that are given to them. The same chapter ends also dealing with rejectors, beginning and end, both about rejectors. And it indicates how those rejectors, in fact, will be the losers in the Day of Judgment, and it, in fact, tries to give some sort of evidence from history as to what happened before to those people who followed the same path of rejection. In 47, however, it still continues dealing with the attitude of rejectors, but in fact it deals with their punishment or penalty even in this life. And you notice actually, if you check the few verses towards the end and beginning of each of these chapters, 46 and 47, that it explains why those people are losers, because it says that they are called falsehood. So whichever way you look at it, there are more than one way actually that you can see the connection of the ending and beginning between 46 and 47. 47 ends with the basic theme of struggle, okay? As if it addresses or educates the emerging Muslim ummah at the time of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that they should really not be too shy to defend themselves, or just seek peace at any price, and also inviting people to stand in the path of Allah and sacrifice not only their lives but sacrifice also their property to defend the truth. Okay? The beginning of chapter 48 deals with victory promised to Prophet Muhammad, as if it tells us that if you're really prepared to struggle, if you're ready to offer your life and your property, then victory will be forthcoming. Because, by the way, if I were to make a historical comment, this chapter 48 that deals with victory at the beginning was revealed after the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, one of the famous treaties in which Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, made peace with the unbelievers, and it seemed at that time that the conditions were very much tilted in favor of the pagans of Mecca. And before anything happened, this was the beginning of a victory that they didn't realize or understand at that time. But actually, the beginning of that verse, of that chapter, when it talks about victory, it actually talks about victory that took place later on. So it is almost like a promise. Many times the promise comes in the Quran in the past tense, not in the future tense. But this is quite familiar for those who are, you know, versed with the Quran, because it means that in the mind of God, or in the decision or decrees of God or Allah, when something is decided, it is decided. It's almost like past tense, even though it may take place in the future. So I'm just making that remark for those who might not be familiar with the style of the Quran. That very chapter 48, while it begins with the promise of victory, it talks about the actual historical fulfillment of that victory.
You see, especially when it begins with the verse that says, لَقَدْ صَدَقَ اللَّهُ رَسُولَهُ الرُّؤْيَا بِالْحَقِّ. Allah has already fulfilled His promise on the vision that He shown or He showed to His messenger, the Prophet. And actually it ends also, in addition to the notion of fulfillment, with praising of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. So it's both fulfillment and praise to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. 49 continues also with honoring Prophet Muhammad, indicating some kind of etiquette, how people should treat him, how they should not raise their voices above his voice, the kind of respect which is due to any Prophet of Allah. And that chapter 49 ends indicating that faith actually is blessing, and one should not really feel too haughty or come to the Prophet and say, now I became Muslim, so as if, you know, it's a favor that he did to the Prophet. And also indicate, in addition, that in the very last verse, that Allah knows the unseen and the hidden things in heavens and earth. Both of these points are related to the beginning of the following chapter, number 50, because it begins actually with indicating that those people who speak about faith, or at least those who rejected faith in contrast, are people who simply were wondering as to why Allah would send a human being like them to be a prophet and messenger. And in addition to this, it deals also with the knowledge of Allah. If you mentioned that the previous one said something about the knowledge of Allah, or knowledge of the hidden things in heavens and earth, this one also deals with the hidden, or information that is hidden from us, and more specifically it deals with the how many people die, how many people go inside the earth. It ends, that's 50, we'll talk about the hour, that is the day of reckoning, and it's a sort of reminder, or ask the Prophet to remind people that you know, this thing is bound to happen. Maybe I should stop at this point and wonder whether it's reasonably clear, if I'm going too fast or too slow.
No, I think that with the aid of the diagrams, things are quite clear. But our viewers, if they had the advantage of actually having the Quran, it might be much more easier for them to follow the relationships between the chapters.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think following it with the Quran would be very useful, even though, of course, you'd have to slow down quite a bit so that they can flip the pages around and get in the end and beginning. I would suggest, however, that for the viewers who wish to examine that issue with, you know, plenty of time and reflect on it further, what I would recommend is at least to get a pencil and paper and just jot down or take a few notes of some of the keywords, and perhaps go back when they have time to examine this,
right,
and reflect on their own. I think that would be useful. Should we go
on?
Yeah,
I think maybe at this point we should go on with our charts.
Okay. We mentioned that the 50th chapter ends with the, again, reminders that the hour is going to take place and that the Prophet should remind people that these things will happen. 51 begins also talking about the hour and how the rejectors of truth also will be punished. So both of them deal with the hour. 51 ends by a sort of warning to the unbelievers that the day, that is the day of reckoning, which they are promised, is not really a very serious business, and there's something really dangerous for them, that they better heed the warning in this life. The beginning of 52, it also deals with the promised day. You see, in عَذَابَ رَبِّكَ لَوَاقَعَ, that the punishment of Allah is going to take place. So both of them follow the same basic theme. It is quite interesting to notice here that the ending of chapter 52 talks about the stars in plural. More specifically, it addresses the Prophet and says, فَسَبِّحْهُ وَإِدْبَارَ النَّجُومِ, that is, supplicate or praise the name of the Lord at the time when the stars retreat, that is, towards the end of the night, the stars. the beginning of chapter 52, the very first word begins, "Lam najmi idha hawa," by the star when it goes down. It ends, that's 53, talking about the approaching judgment, that is the approachment of the day of judgment. It ends actually with some description, that's the end. The beginning of the following chapter, which is 54, it talks about when the moon is cleft asunder, which again one of the signs of the approaching of the hour. So you have the stars, the moon, and all of them dealing with the basic theme.
What a beautiful relationship.
Exactly. They're going actually from one end to the beginning, and so on. Chapter 54 ends by talking about Allah as sovereign and omnipotent. This one is very amazing also when you connect it with 55. In fact, for those who understand Arabic, they can appreciate it even better, because it ends by saying, عند ملوك مقتدر. The next word in the following chapter is الرحمن, that describes Allah as sovereign, omnipotent, and then moves on in the first of the next chapter, 55, saying that Allah is the most gracious, as if it's just a continuous recitation, or continuous description of the divine attributes. It ends again with some description of the hereafter and how Allah has the majesty and honor. That basic theme of the hereafter is reflected in the beginning of 56, again talking about the hour. 56 ends addressing or commanding the Prophet, praise thy Lord, فَسَبِّحْ بِسْمِ رَبِّكَ الْعَظِيمِ, praise thy Lord. The beginning of 57 actually deals also with praise of the Lord. If it's سَبَّحَ لِلَّهِ, all creatures supplicate in the name of the Lord, as if it's just responding to the ending. It ends with Allah as the most graceful. The beginning of chapter 58 shows one aspect of that grace by paying attention to a complaint made by a simple woman to the Prophet concerning some family problem. It ends indicating that those who resist the truth will be humiliated. The beginning of 59 actually talk about the actual punishment and the banishment for those who were committed acts of treachery. It ends talking about the alliance of the unbelievers, which is very similar to the beginning of the 60th chapter, that you should not take for protectors those who are aligned or aligning themselves for the cause of unbelief. And finally it ends dealing with the unbelievers.
I think we just finished in time. Thank you very much, Dr. Jamal Bardawi. We've run out of time, and hope to see all of you here next week. Tomorrow, us here in Islam in Focus. Assalamu alaikum.